And then the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. In French, which is the author's native language, the blossom word is éclore, which my dictionary says also means to hatch, to open, to come to the light. That's the mythic message of Easter. From the pain, sometimes agony, of being straight-jacketed in the old brown seed, the tight and dark little bud, we can hatch. We can become reborn, find ourselves in the light, become transformed. Hallelujah. We Unitarian Universalists like to make jokes about this holiday, like the UU Sunday School where they were asked what Easter was about, and the eager kid replies, it's when Jesus was killed and he was put into a cave with a rock at the door, and every year he comes out and if he sees his shadow, there'll be 6 weeks more of winter. That silly little joke lifts up our UU mixed feelings about Easter, our occasional feelings of superiority to the supernaturalism involved in a story of someone rising from the dead. But if we put aside our analytical approach to myth, we can feel truths that our hearts and souls know. Blossoming, transforming, hatching, entering the light is a complex process that involves breaking and hard things and often death. The poet that we heard earlier says, becoming often waits the nourishment of tears. Jesus was resurrected, but it wasn't a pain-free, aren't we all glad God only gives us what we can handle kind of zippy little event. He endured persecution and then torture, and even he descended into despair. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? This man who taught radical love made the choice in the Garden of Gethsemane to stay on the path of transformation, not an easy one. And yet that path led to the joy of resurrection, an emotion far deeper than mere happiness. One of the most touching post-sermon exchanges I have ever had came a few years ago, when I had preached on hope, exploring how we find it, how we keep it, sometimes against such great odds. I told stories of a couple of people who had suffered through the dark of terrible hopelessness, who had managed to emerge back into the light of hope and faith. I spoke with some awe, which I still feel, of their humility and their persistence and their courage, of the way that they were able to bear their suffering and ultimately make the choice to hope, to work, and to wait for the glowing heart of life to reappear, which it did for them. And some of us wept at those brave souls. At the end of the service, I stepped down from the chancel to touch a person who was sobbing heartbrokenly. I put a hand on her shoulder and I said, "Can I help?" The passionate, almost ferocious answer was, "No, it's just so damned hard. You don't make the choice once, you keep choosing over and over and over." That woman has known love, and she has known Mary's sadness walking through the garden. She has had those conversations with death. She has known times when the seed was sown on sand. And yet, she has chosen over and over the risk of rebirth over the risk of staying tight within her grief or her anger or her despair or her pain. And sometimes she knows joy. And here's a story that is familiar to many of you from all these years together. In the latter 70s and early 80s, I was drinking alcoholically. Those of you who have walked the substance abuse path or shared it with someone else know that it is a closed and deathly road. There is lying and cheating and terrible ill health. And as the disease progresses, behavior that is contrary to everything that one believes in. And yet, even as we long to be released from the burden of addiction, that's a path we know, there's something very risky about giving up the familiar, about giving over, about taking the considerable risk of rebirth, of resurrection. Well, thanks to the intervention of my beloved daughter, I entered a treatment center. In that blessed place, with the grace of God, I was able to commit firmly to breaking that closed spiritual space, able to commit to blossoming without alcohol. Every day of my life, since June 29th, 1982, until this moment, I give thanks for the continuing blessing of that particular rebirth. In the face of all the ups and downs of the past 30 years, I still rejoice with hosannas that I could step into the light and that I could be transformed from death to life. If I had stayed on that path, I would be literally dead long time ago. And that's what Easter is about. Wherever we may be on our journey this morning, let us rejoice in the hatchings that we have known and be grateful, so grateful for the rebirth which arises from seeming death. Let us reflect on joy, on the beauty and health that we have experienced and we have seen in others. Look outside and see April's resurrection scene, the yellows and the pinks and the whites and the greens shouting hallelujah to the silent browns of winter. Try to catch a glimpse of a 5'6" white and pink bunny bopping around with our Easter excited kids. Think of the people you love and the ones who love you, especially the ones you have wanted to close off but didn't. Feel the miracle of loyalty and affection and friendship and intimacy. Listen to the red-winged blackbirds out in the cattails and catch a glimpse of those great blue herons which fly over our church. Our world can be a broken one, feeling like there's no room to take the risk of blossoming, but there is. In the face of it all, it's a beautiful day. Let's not let it get away.